Devices Radio Network.
When it comes to the day of the contest, I'm his father. He comes to me for advices. So it's not that
hard to give him the wrong advices.
Hey guys, what is up? Welcome to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally. I am going to embark with you today on a new sub-series of programs on the program Advices Radio. This is a program that I'm calling Huge AF. Huge as fuck. And you'll be hearing other installments of Huge AF in the future. And here's my reasoning. I feel like there are so many cool facets and aspects of the sport of bodybuilding and, you know, of what we're doing. But the foundation of it all is first putting on muscle mass. And I'm not just talking just basic adding muscle. We're trying to get freaky, you know, unnormal, unnatural amounts of muscle. And I don't know many people who really felt like they've ever been big enough. So I'm definitely in the boat. Myself included, I could stand to gain a lot more than I have. And I thought it would be a lot of fun to bring on some cool people that happen to know a little bit about getting Huge AF. So to start us out today with the first installment of Huge AF, we have Dave Kalik. He is somebody that reached Huge AF status in his day, and he's helping a lot of other people achieve it. He's a great dude. He's a friend of the show, friend of mine, and he has a lot of cool stuff to share. He's going to get real basic on us, but hey, I feel like we can all use that from time to time, from the new guy who doesn't have much experience to those of us who have been working at this game for a long time. I thought this would be a lot of fun. I think you guys will enjoy it too. I also wanted to mention, if you guys haven't noticed, at the Advices Radio website, we now have t-shirts available. We've got some really cool tri-blended men's t-shirts that they just hang on the muscle in a very flattering way. We've got women's racer backs, and we have a handful of men's tank tops left. So check it out, advicesradio.com/shop, or just click on the shop button while you are at the website. Guys, without further ado, let's get to Dave Kalik and the first installment of Huge AF.
Awaiting the hour of reprisal, no time slips away.
Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm your host, Scott McNally, and back with me on the mic today is prep coach and massive bodybuilder himself. I know he doesn't call himself massive, but I do. Dave Kalik, what's up, man? Thanks for coming back on the show. I appreciate it.
What's up, Scott? Very welcome. Glad to be back.
I know that it's just your, as you call it, your leftover muscle, but your leftover muscle is still more than my current working at it phase.
Just leftovers.
So last time we were talking, you were saying you're gonna start, you know, pushing it a little harder in the gym and getting a little bit more food in and stuff. Have you still been doing that? And if so, like, what's going on with it?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit for me. I mean, it's funny because if I just train more frequently, you know, if I just, you know, eat more post workout, whatever, then I my body weight comes up a couple pounds. It's pretty funny, but you know, I'm not really. Again, the direction of trying to, you know, get big again or anything like that. I'm still enjoying my, you know, my TRT shot once a week. I'm like, oh, it's the day I can take my shot, you know. And I mean, I'm going on 4 years in that. Yeah. So, but, you know, it's interesting to see just, you know, like how, you know, when you eat more, just very basic, which is some of the stuff we're going to talk about today.
Yeah.
You know, just 101, basically, you know, with increasing and training, you know, and just more foods than, you know, so that's just what I'm doing. So I train maybe, you know, 4 days a week, 3 to 4 days a week, a couple days a week at Gold in Venice, a couple days a week here in the Valley. And so that's it. You know, my diet is basically, I'm very anti-inflammatory in my diet, you know, I want to be healthy. You know, just trying to stay in shape at this point. But I mean, I've been training a little bit more frequently now at this point. And you know,
do you take any kind of like health supplements, like over the counter type stuff that you believe is
good for, you know, your lab work? And, you know, you mentioned like the anti-inflammatory diet, anything that goes along with that?
I'm really into, you know, to high level, you know, turmeric extract.
Okay.
I have, I'm very big into, you know, I mean, I'm not, it's not a keto diet. I mean, I definitely have, you know, a good amount of carbs, but I mean, I'm basically, you know, very high omega-3.
Hmm.
You know, there's a lot of salmon in my diet. There's, you know, my meats are, you know, the beef is, you know, grass fed. I am very much into olive oil. I have quite a few tablespoons a day. You know, flax, you know, ground flax in my shakes with olive oil with salmon, you know, don't laugh. Sometimes like a breakfast might be, I know it sounds crazy, but I might have, you know, believe it or not, I'll actually crack open like one of those ramen packets. I know that doesn't sound very anti-inflammatory, but, you know, I'll mix like salmon in there with, you know, a couple of tablespoons of olive oil and, you know, to me, what an awesome breakfast, you know.
Actually sounds really good.
Yeah, it's actually, I do, for, you know, anti-inflammatory purposes, I do use metformin.
Okay.
Every day. We can go into that at some point. You know, basically supplements. I mean, I mentioned the turmeric extract. I take vitamin D3, you know, like 4,000 units a day. I take coenzyme Q10, you know, about 300 milligrams a day. Magnesium at night before bed. 3 grams of vitamin C a day. Comprehensive B complex. And I'm into fish oils with a good ratio of, you know, DHA in there.
Nice.
And, I mean, that's pretty much the bread and butter, but I pretty much grass-fed beef, you know, serving of grass-fed beef pretty much each day, salmon every day, make eggs each day.
So yeah, you're getting a lot of fats then.
Yeah. I mean, I do have, I use some of that whole wheat pasta with olive oil, my wife and I will generally, you know, we go out, we do sushi pretty often. We live in the heartland where there's a lot of Korean barbecue.
Okay.
Over here. And a lot of sesame oil with the Korean barbecue. And sesame oil is, you know, it's very similar structure to, you know, the olive oil.
Hmm.
And there's also sesame in sesame oil, which is, you know, has a lot of health benefits, even has a little bit of a mild diuretic effect.
Hmm.
So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the bread and butter of my diet.
Nice. Well, you know, Dave and I were talking, guys, and the reason we wanted to get together here, well, first of all, I wanted an excuse to bring Dave back, first of all. So that's number one. But, you know, number two, I wanted to kind of focus on, you know, the heart of bodybuilding, hardcore muscle growth. You know, that's the foundation of what we're all about here. You know, is at the end of the day, we're trying to grow as much muscle as we can, you know, while staying healthy, not getting too crazy, you know, doing anything that's going to hurt us long term, but be able to be as big as we can and as healthy as we can while doing it. I thought to myself, who better to bring on to talk about that than you, Dave? So we were going to try to cover some of the different angles here about what it really takes, because I feel like we needed to get back to some of the foundations, you know, with the programs we do here at Advices. I feel like we go off on a lot of different cool and interesting tangents. And, you know, lately we've been talking about some things that aren't even directly bodybuilding related, but mindset related, and things that could maybe help you improve not only in bodybuilding, but in every aspect of your life. I just feel like we needed to ground things. And so that's what I wanted to do today, was just, let's talk about how to get fucking big, you know? So, I mean, to start us out, Dave, with this, I mean, the foundation, like we talked about before this, you wanted to focus first on food, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is not going to sound very sexy to a lot of the listeners, but I mean, this is pretty old school 101, but I got to tell you, you know, basically the components are, you know, and we'll break it down obviously more, but I mean, it's pounding high quality food. It's getting involved with a lot of compound exercises and training, and, you know, it's about recovery and, you know, the pharmacology, yes, but I get to say that that's having the horse in front of the cart is the nutrition and the training. I mean, we'll talk about drugs and everything, but, you know,
yeah.
I think there's a lot of, under eating. I mean, a lot of this has to do with nutrient timing, you know, window periods of when there should be food density in relationship to training, and other times during the day when, you know, window periods of food should be at their highest. You know, going to examples, I mean, to me, you know, as far as food density and caloric intake, you know, having a caloric surplus, you know, I think a lot of people, that I still think there's a lot of under-eating. There's a lot of just, you know, again, over-reliance on compounds. And we'll go into the compounds, as I said. But, you know, I really think people need to focus more on, you know, food choices and density.
Okay. So so to start us out, let's take me. I'm a little over 200 pounds right now. First of all, how many times a day should a guy like me be eating? And how many grams of protein? Obviously, it's going to vary from person to person what nutrition is going to be. But, you know, I'm some guy who just comes up to you in the gym and I'm like, dude, you look huge. You know, what should I start with to look like you? what would you say in a nutshell, protein wise, and times, how many times a day would you suggest eating?
I mean, you know, there's got to be definitely like, you know, there's got to be six meals, I mean, or five or six, you know, five larger than six ones. As far as grams of protein, I mean, first of all, before we go into the amounts, I mean, as you know, I'm not a meet your macros kind of a person. You know, to me, a gram of protein is not a gram of protein.
Okay.
You know, basically, I mean, if you're at a sale, I, you know, 400 grams of protein a day. And, well, okay, I'm just going to get that all from, you know, egg white and whey isolate.
Mm.
You're not going to get big off of that.
Okay. It's just not going to happen. Even if you are eating that much, 400 grams, which would be 2 grams per pound of body weight for me, I'm still going to lack, huh?
Yeah, because basically, I mean, it's I'll probably say this over and over again, but food density. A gram of protein is not a gram of protein. I mean, there's different digestive rates, assimilation rates. There's different amino acid profiles with proteins. I mean, chicken, fish, beef, they all behave differently from a digestive standpoint. You know, there's different amino acid spec, you know, profiles with different proteins. You know, I mean, and, you know, if we're talking about 400 grams, I mean, first of all, I mean, I'm very big into like whole eggs, for example. I mean, they did there's an interesting study years ago where they took non-steroids, you know, control groups of just people who are weight training.
Okay.
And they did an experiment of 12 weeks. And one group had 3 whole eggs in their diet and another group didn't. And with just, you know, progressive weight resistance training, you know, but there was, you know, training to failure. It was all laid out for them, you know, for the exercising, you know, protocol and stuff like that. Just good, you know, good basic training. And they did like a muscle biopsy at the end of this 12-week for both groups. And for example, the individuals that had the 3 whole eggs in their diet, you know, there was like something like, I don't know, like 28% more muscle growth after the, you know, the biopsy exhibited.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, nutrients, I mean, like there's things in red meat and whole eggs that you can't find elsewhere. You know what I mean? You know, chicken and rice is great, you know, but you're still going to basically lack a lot of the goodies that you're going to get out of, you know, dense foods. I mean, salmon, you know, beef, eggs. I mean, these are powerhouses of proteins. Not just because I think that they're denser proteins, just because I think, you know, the fats that are involved with them. And, you know, again, I really believe that growing muscle has a lot to do with, you know, essential fats as well. It's not just, you know, pounding the protein. So I think that, you know, 400 grams, I mean, you know, sure, some of it can be whey isolating, some of it could be, you know, eggs, but egg white, you know, but I think, you know, you're going to want to get, you know, layers of different proteins in there. As you know, I'm big into combining some proteins in the same meal.
Yeah.
You know, because I believe there's an overlapping of amino acid profiles, you know, I mean, different proteins have different signatures of amino acids. So, you know, I mean, if someone comes up to you in the gym and say, how do you get so big? I mean, you know, the answer is, I mean, honestly, it's, I mean, I really believe in, you know, the red meat, the eggs. I know I'm being redundant here, but window periods, in the morning. You know, I think, you know, some whey isolate and some egg whites in the morning with some oatmeal is not necessarily going to, you know, there should be whole eggs. You know, there should be, and not we're talking about, you know, fats and proteins, but I mean, there has to be, you know, good amount of ample amount of carbs too. I mean, unless someone's really glucose intolerant, carbs are a staple. They're not a necessity in growing, but I mean, certainly, you know, there should be, let's say if someone trains after meal three, they've got a couple meals going into the workout, a couple meals afterwards.
Right.
I mean, you certainly want to have, you know, your carbs, you know, there should be a focus, you know, pre and post workout carbs. I mean, the first meal of the day should be, you know, high in carbs. The pre and post workout meals should be high in carbs. What I like to do for someone's off season is I like to have nutrient timing where, again, you know, first thing in the morning, you know, because cortisol levels are high first thing in the morning too. And, you know, you're waking up from a fasted state. So, I mean, it's kind of like old fashioned to say, but breakfast is the most important meal. But I mean, there's a window period when you get out of bed, and there's a window period post-workout where I think that these meals, that's when you want to take advantage of that and where caloric density needs to be at its highest.
Okay. So, you know, I have a lot of people that'll come to me, you know, I show them a diet. They're not used to eating like a bodybuilder. The portions are just what they would need to eat to do what you're talking about. It's overwhelming. So let's say that we have somebody listening right now and they definitely want to grow muscle, but they're finding that they're overwhelmed. What would you suggest to them about getting to what you're talking about? You know, where if you're talking about 400 grams of protein, that's going to take a commitment, basically, is what I'm saying.
It's good to, I mean, eating, growing in a lot of ways, growing muscle is just as hard, if not harder, than pre-contest mode. You know, I mean, it's hard pounding food, but again, you need to be in a caloric surplus. There's a lot of people I think are afraid of eating a lot of food. Now this is not eating point. This is not eating, like, again, I'm not saying like pounding just everything fucking in sight on that's not nailed down.
No, that sounds very planned, what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, but don't get me wrong. I mean, there are times where adjacent calories from, you know, junk food, you know, that's, you know, there's, again, we want to be in a surplus. But again, we don't want the surplus. You know, it's easy to get, you know, 5,000 calories from shit.
Sure.
You know, it is a commitment, as you're saying, to pound a lot of clean food. It's very voluminous.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of volume of food.
My thought has always been that if you can't get 400, let's say you got somebody who's listening right now and they aren't very committed, 200 pounds, they're eating 150 grams of protein a day. You know, you want to get them up to 400 grams of protein a day. My thought is just take your time with it. You know, I mean, this is something that's like, it's a long-term commitment that we're doing here. And if you're starting at 150, if you can get to 200 tomorrow, and you can do that for now, you're going to be better off than you were. And, you know, keep building it. Keep adding an ounce every meal, you know, as you go, as you can tolerate it. Because I'm one of those people, Dave. You know, it's very hard for me to consume the amount of food you're talking about. I just don't have the appetite. For me, dieting is easy. I'm okay with going hungry. But to keep pushing that food in, especially calorie-dense food, it's difficult. It takes a lot of effort.
There's no question. And, you know, but it takes commitment to want to be progressive or needing to be progressive with calories. I mean, you know, it's hard to eat a lot. It's funny because on the other end of the spectrum, you know, at the Arnold, you know, we're talking to some of the, you know, Brian Shaw and these guys, you know, we're talking about, you know, meals of, you know, a pound of beef at once, you know, a dozen whole eggs all at once.
Wow, that's a lot of whole eggs.
You know what I mean? You know, a whole loaf of bread throughout the day with, you know, a whole jar of peanut butter. I mean, these guys are, the amount of calories, it's funny because I was talking to the lady, you know, we're at the host hotel, and the lady that was, you know, they had a whole, the powerlifters had their whole separate, like, eating area.
Okay.
And, I mean, they're like, you know, she was saying, like, one guy had a plate of sausages of, like, 23 sausages and, like,
wow.
You know, like two bowls of oatmeal and, you know, I mean, just a dozen, I mean, just crazy fucking amounts of food.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, that's a whole different commitment, but I mean, it's going to be, you know, if you've made the decision of wanting to get bigger and pack on muscle, you need to know that along with the training is, you know, it's the foods. Hmm. the foods can be progressive. Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to go from 150 grams of protein to 400. And like, you know, I mean, we're talking about 400. I mean, like, some people weren't eat, you know, quite as much. I mean, some people were fine on 300 with, like, you know, higher carb structure. But I'm just saying, like, you know, for you, you know, that we would be progressive with it. You know, okay. I mean, it, you know, like, maybe if you're starting off with, you know, 6 ounces, whatever, and then as, you know, if you're not like in, you know, you're feeling stuff, then, you know, 7 ounces, maybe the following week, and then so on and so forth. Hmm. But you want to get to the point where, you know, you're eating and, you know, an hour later, you're not so stuffed anymore and you're kind of thinking about the next meal. So this is not like, I'm not into like the, you know, where you get like, oh, well, you have to put on 30 pounds of fat to build 10 pounds. No, it shouldn't be like that. I mean, we don't want to walk around, as I mentioned before in other shows, like just blown out, just inflammatory, uncomfortable, trouble bending over breathing when you're tying your fucking shoes. You know, like, it shouldn't be like that. But I mean, you need to be like, you got to eat. I mean, you know, and I think the first thing to start with, if someone is like, you know, a beginner, or, you know, if you guys, you listeners out there, and you're just starting, again, you know, like, the first window periods that you do want to build up food wise is going to be, you know, pre and post workout and, you know, the first meal. So in the morning, I mean, just going to give you basic stuff. I mean, you know, have whole eggs in the morning, you know, maybe have, you know, 3 whole eggs, you know, a scoop and a half of whey isolate, you know, a cup of oats measured before cooking, you know, a tablespoon of coconut oil, you know, 10 to 12 ounces of orange juice, you know, I mean, make it a meal.
So the orange juice is okay. What do you think about fruits in an off season diet? Do fruits play
I'm
any kind
about
of,
it. I'm yeah? all about it. I was going to get to that.
I'll hold on then. I'm going to let you go.
No. I mean, I was going to say, like, having, you know, 3/4 of a cup of blueberries in your oats, having, you know, some kiwi or banana with your post-workout. I mean, you know, there's fruits definitely. And by the way, fruits are a great way of having, you know, adjacent calories. You know, you can attach an apple to, you know, your 9 ounces of yam, 8 ounces of chicken, and 2 tablespoons of almond butter. You know, fruit is great. You know, fructose in conjunction with, you know, other types of carbs with essential fats and proteins. I mean, it really completes a calorically dense meal. I mean, you know, by adding a couple servings of fruit a day, you can jack your calories up, you know, several hundred calories.
I'd have to think too, that fiber has to be beneficial. I assume that, do you suggest any kind of fiber with this type of diet?
I mean, I think like a lot of people, they do leave out, you know, leave out vegetables or, you know, psyllium husks, you know, sugar-free Metamucil, fruit has good fiber. Yeah. But I mean, definitely, you know, from a GI standpoint, you know, you want to have digestive integrity and you want to have, you know, elimination integrity. So, you know, a lot of people, when they do really, really high protein diets, whatever, they get constipated and there's not enough fiber. There shouldn't be so much fiber because a lot of fiber can then become bloating, you know, and a lot of fiber can then, if you're eating like tons and tons of broccoli, it's hard to get down, you know, the whole meal that you're eating along with it. But there should be some degree of, you know, there's got to be some fiber somewhere. You know, greens, psyllium husks, and we're mentioning fruit. I mean, this should be one of the staples involved with all this eating.
Yeah, I feel like it's easy to forget about those things because you think like, well, the protein is going to directly correlate to muscle growth. You know, the vegetables are just going to take up space in my stomach, I think people think.
No, I mean, a lot of growing muscle has to do with the assimilation and being able to absorb foods, right? And, you know, fiber can play a very beneficial role. You know, and if you're inflamed and you're not going to the bathroom enough, whatever, and your stomach is sticking out, and, you know, that's not a very good environment to, it's hard to shuttle nutrients that way, I think.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. You know?
So, you mentioned, you know, nutrient timing. Where do carbs play a role in this with your training?
Well, I mean, like, you know, by rule of thumb, like, let's say if someone, I'm going to keep just using an example of somebody training after meal three. I mean, you know, let's say you have, you know, your eggs and oatmeal in the morning with the, you know, the meal we're talking about. And then let's say, you know, you'd want to basically focus on like more like higher, like lower glycemic carbs going into the workout.
Okay.
The oats are low glycemic. This is, we're talking about for energy and feeling stable during the workout. If you're spiking, you can have, sweet potatoes, let's say, great before training. Having enough energy going into the workout, and then the post-workout window period, should be dense in carbs for recovery.
Okay.
Trying to put on weight, intra-workout nutrition, I'm not into slamming tons of carbs into workout. We can talk about that, if there's any insulin pre-workout or whatever, but for the beginner, timing, let's say post-workout, something like Carbolin, in hydrolyzed way, post, and then, once that clears, getting in, the calorically dense post-workout meal is really good. If you're going to do that, I think a lot of people too, when they make a shake post-workout, I think a lot of times they use too much water.
Yeah.
I think if you're going to break down, let's say Carbolin or hydrolyzed whey, try to use the least amount of water possible. So you're just not so damn full, so you can get ready for the next meal, which should be very big in that window period.
So that the post-workout carb and protein that you're talking about, that's not really the muscle building portion of the day itself, right? That's, you're kind of like priming yourself for the real food. If you had to pick one or the other, I'm sure you're going with the real food.
Food will always supersede anything we're doing with supplements, carb drink, not everything. There's no doubt. We are setting it up.
I just want to be clear, because sometimes I've seen where people will just have the shake that they, and sometimes there isn't a choice due to the way someone's day is set up logistically, but I've seen it where they just have whey post-workout and then they don't eat again for another 2 hours.
Yeah. Like, hence the under eating. Right. I think that's my point. Putting a gun to my head, you want to choose the whole food, the foods, obviously.
Yeah. Okay.
But the shake post-workout, to get that in, and then to reset, and then if you can, 45 minutes later, bang out the meal, that's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you think about the intra-workout carbs? The way I've seen it personally is that if I've used intra-workout carbs, then I don't necessarily want to use them post-workout for, a shake. Like, I'll do one or the other. I'll either drink them while I'm training, or I'll drink them right after I'm training.
Yeah, I agree. For the most part, if there's going to be intra-workout carbs, then the advantage of that is that you can go right away into a large meal, a large surplus meal post-workout, because you've replaced intra, and now you can go into the meal. Now, some people don't have a really good tolerance of intra-workout carbs.
Yeah.
And to me, I just think I prefer just basically, I really prefer the BCA just during the training.
Okay.
The post-workout stuff going on afterwards. But, there's the intra-workout stuff has, intra-workout carbs definitely has its place. Especially, if there's, things being used prior to the workout.
Okay.
But again, some people feel like there's some people just, even just natural people. Let's say they're not using insulin before training.
Yeah.
Drinking glucose, drinking carbs during training, a lot of times they just feel weighted down and their stomach is full,
Yeah.
And feel sluggish during training, with intra workout.
So let's say you don't use the intra. Let's say you use, some Carbolin post-workout. What do you suggest for this theoretical 200-pound guy, carb-wise, as a generic recommendation? What would be an average amount to get in post-workout?
So I would recommend, let's say, 50 grams from, the Carbolin or the Waxy Maize, or a drink like that with, two scoops of hydrolyzed whey post. Hydrolyzed whey is a little bit different than regular whey isolate. It's more micro, the uptake is quicker. So I think like that leucine hits you quicker, harder, if you will. By rule of thumb. And then to me, a great meal afterwards would be, getting the beef, the beef in that window period post.
Okay, so you like post-workout beef?
I do. I definitely do.
All right.
Now, I mean, we're speaking very generically. I mean, right. Like, there's some people who, I mean, like, if you're, like, let's say if you're, like, kind of, if you're holding a good amount of body fat and you're trying to build size, and, you know, you don't want to have, just by rules, I mean, you don't want to have tons and tons of carbs. Again, because here's a situation where someone who's trying to build size, but they, the composition where they're, you know, there's a good amount of love handles and lower belly fat, whatever. I mean, you know, pounding a ton of intra-workout carbs or post-workout carbs and then a huge, you know, carb meal afterwards is not, I mean, that's not going to help. I mean, there should be, that person would want to be more partitioned with, you know, more, you know, fats, you know, the ratio of protein and fats could be a little bit higher in that environment compared to the carbs.
Hmm.
So, I mean, it really depends on the individual.
Yeah.
The rule of thumb, I think beef is really great in the winter period.
Okay. And yeah, that I think we're looking at it the way I've seen it in my head. What we're talking about is somebody who's in a position to put on, you know, muscle, somebody who isn't overly fat. I think that's a whole other story, isn't it? That, I mean,
It is a whole other story. So just, I mean, basically, like, if you, I mean, let's take it a step further. I mean, the hard gainer, if there's such, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, definitely, like, yeah, you definitely want to take, I mean, if you're relatively lean and, like, you know, take advantage. I mean, there's that work, that density food-wise post. I mean, the carbs can be very high. I mean, there's even, like, pasta, and, you know, with the beef would be awesome.
Okay.
Not the Durham whole wheat pasta. That's just too starchy. But, I mean, like, the 100% whole wheat pasta or the high protein pasta, which, you know, is made, there's, you know, it's a lot lower glycemic in nature.
Okay.
But still high glycemic enough where you get a spike, you know, because, you know, you want to, you know, either insulin or not, you know, you want to have like some degree of your pancreas punching out a good amount of insulin in response to carbs post-workout. I mean, because, you know, we want to shuttle, you know?
Yeah. So on this note then, you know, so we're kind of covering around the time of the workout and carbohydrates, you know, for this hard gainer, somebody who is trying to grow and they've worked up to this 400 grams of protein and they're really pushing the carbs. Is there any point in the day where you feel this guy doesn't need carbs anymore or should he be eating carbs? Okay. Where would that be?
Yes. I'm always into like the last meal of the day, like being carb free.
Okay.
I really think that, you know, keep in mind for carbs to be effective, you know, one needs to retain insulin sensitivity to carbs, you know, how glucose tolerant are you to carbs?
Hmm.
And you get to a point where, I mean, if you're banging out 1,000 grams of carbs every day, I mean, you're going to lose sensitivity. You're going to start soaring. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
So I think I'm really into the last of the day being carb free.
Okay. And when you see that, when you say that they start to build up this insulin resistance and they you know, they aren't processing things as well, you know, as a coach, what are you seeing in their physique at that point?
You're seeing fat storage in predisposed areas. Like everyone has, you know, stubborn areas.
Yeah.
And if people are more love handle, like you're going to start seeing, you know, accumulation there. People are more like, if they're leaner in their lower back, but they're more lower belly, you know, storing, you're going to start seeing that. You're going to start seeing just in the face, the inflammatory markers, just the puffiness, when the athlete is sending progress pics and they're having trouble pulling their stomach in, doing a side check, you know, the inflammation level is what dictates that happening, you know?
Okay.
And again, the storage, is part of it. And you're just going to see those areas like blow up and, you know, again, it's, you know, your index, it's not about, you know, putting on as much weight on the scale as possible.
Yeah.
It's about getting bigger.
So what would happen if they reach that point? You know, because I think it's going to happen to anybody, right? Anybody who is pushing the food as hard as they can. Let's say that, they've got 8 months to grow as much as they can, between now and the time that they're going to start dieting again. You know, they go for several months and they find that, you know, they're reaching that point where they're getting insulin resistant. They're seeing, you know, more fat stores. They're seeing that their stomach is distending now and stuff. How do you remedy this situation? Can they somehow turn this around and salvage a few months left of grow time?
Yeah, I mean, at that point in time, that's when I like to do like resets, where you go into a lower carb segment where maybe fats come up and protein's a little bit higher. You want to retain sensitivity to carbs. So a lot of times in between, to kind of reset, if you will, you know, low carb segments or even keto segments can be advantageous for little stretches of time to reset so that you can utilize carbs and be more effective with carbs where they're not storing as much.
Okay.
You know, so again, you know, sometimes it's okay to, you know, come down a couple pounds in weight, but to be reset and be sensitive for carbs again. You know, I mean, excuse my analogy of, you know, when there's a big fire and the firefighters want to burn off, you know, 100 acres to salvage 1,000 acres, you know, sometimes you have to regroup and reset so you can, you know, battle another day, if you will, like where the carbs, you know what I mean? Like, that's how I think. That's how I think it should be fixed. I mean, you can't just pound and pound and pound and pound.
I think that's a mistake a lot of people make, because they, you know, we want to force things. And I think with bodybuilding, we want to impose our will on our bodies to make it do what we want it to do. But
exactly right.
You know,
exactly. Your body will say fuck it after a while. I mean, you know, there's only, like, for example, I mean, you know, your pancreas, you have alpha and beta cells in your pancreas, you know, and the beta cells can only punch out so much insulin. You know, then there's another hormone that's released is glucagon. Glucagon lowers insulin. You know, if you keep fucking going up and down, up and down, up and down, that's how you lose the sensitivity, you know? Hmm. So you can't just keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. You know, of course you want to, you know, we want to force it, but you know, if you lose that sensitivity, then there's even, like, you know, with loss of insulin sensitivity, you actually, like, even your muscle cells, there's less IGF acknowledgement in muscle cells when you lose sensitivity, you know? So in other words, you don't grow as much tissue when you lose that sensitivity. Again, you know, carbs are then trending more towards storage rather than glycogen replacement or shuttling or use for energy, you know?
So while you're kind of following along with somebody who's doing this and they've built their diet up, how often do you suggest they kind of reevaluate where they're at? You know, say they're on an 8-month diet or 8-month, you know, off season diet, and they're trying to grow, and they've built the diet up. How often would you suggest they look at themselves and say, hey, am I at a point where I could handle more, or, you know, am I at a point where I need to dial back?
The dialing back should come when, okay, you're putting on weight, but then seemingly the weight that's being put on is, you know, again, the love handle area, the areas that are predisposed to begin with.
I think I wasn't totally clear, and I guess let me re-ask my question. How often do you look at the client, or how often should somebody look at themselves and ask that question? Have I pushed too far, like every week or every 2 weeks, or... You know, how long should they wait, you know, before deciding that they are going to make changes?
I mean, there should be an evaluation every 7 to 10 days.
Okay. Every 7 to 10 days. So you're constantly then on it, you know, whether you're doing it yourself or whether you're working with Dave or another coach, this is something that should be done almost every week.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. I mean, think about it. I mean, if you're looking at, okay, like if you want to say, okay, there's a show and, you know, there's 28 weeks away, you know, and there's going to be, you know, 16 weeks of, you know, if we're use the word bulking, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the 16 weeks is, I mean, it's really, you know, every week, I mean, again, every 7 to 10 days, you should be looking at what's going on here so that there's productivity. I mean, because if you're just getting fatter and fatter and fatter, then you're losing productivity over that 16 week stretch.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That makes total sense. I'm just trying to help give people a framework here, you know, to kind of help themselves and kind of what,
yeah, guys,
to
if you're out there, I mean, look at yourself. I mean, like, and be realistic, you know. It's not, I mean, I think a lot of people are focusing on the number on the scale.
Okay.
You know, focus on what you're seeing in the mirror. I mean, if the ultimate goal is just to build muscle, I mean, we're trying to you know, we're not trying to become an offensive lineman where we're trying to, you know, it's about quality.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't see that happening, then it's time to reassess and back off, or again, you know, do resets so that again you can go back to battle with the higher carbs and everything.
Hmm. Okay, fair enough. So, I kind of got you. We touched on it for just a second, and then you went into the reasoning. But you were saying that last meal of the day, you do like to keep no carbs or low carbs. And that's just to give people kind of a break from the carbs at that point.
I think it's just for resetting. I think that you have a lot, you're more in a driver's seat for being insulin sensitive. If you can, you know, close it down at the end of the day.
Okay. And just to be clear too, we're talking still about a guy who's probably going to eat three meals, then train and then eat three meals. So he's not training at the end of the day. He's training much earlier. He still had carbs pre and post workout and then the meal after that as well. But then that final meal, that's when you're shutting it down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I mean, there's some people who I know some people train where they can't, they literally have to train like later in the day where they only have one more meal left in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I know a lot of guys like that, you know, work in afternoon or something and they eat five meals, train, and then one more and then bed.
Yeah. So in that case, you kind of want to like switch around a little bit, like for the late day and the later in the day trainer.
Yeah.
For example, the person that does the five meals, they only have one meal left. You know, you're going to, and they're trying to build size, but that sixth meal is going to have to be, going to have a carb, you know, the whole thing we're talking about. But in that case, you know, you can go where make the first two meals can be like lighter in carbs.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So you're kind of like, you know, resetting, if you will. I mean, think about it. I'm not saying that the first meal needs to be carb free, but you know, you'd want to be progressive with the carbs leading up to the workout, you know, setting up the environment for enough going in and then, you know, having the recovery and the higher carb segment afterwards. And then, you know, in the morning, the first meal, you know, you wouldn't need, you know, 200 grams of carbs in the first meal.
Gotcha. Well, I think this lays out just a really solid idea of what the nutrition, you know, needs to look like. And we've talked about training before here, you know, as you've said on the last episode that we did together, like basically it's about training hard, you know, it's about the compound movements, not using machines. It's about pushing heavy weights and continuing to try to progress with that. Right.
It is. I mean, it's going to be the bread and butter exercises. You should be progressive in the amount of weights you're using, the amount of reps, you know, if you're doing a barbell row and you're rowing 225 for 10 reps, I'm just giving you an example, and you're going to failure on ninth and 10th rep, then the next time you are training, you should, you know, put a 10 and a 5 on each side and try to get the same amount of reps with the same form, you know? So it's a progressive increase in intensity that's required. You need to muster up intensity it's progressive weight resistance.
And therefore your body will adapt by growing.
Yes. If you're placing more of an overload on your muscle, so there's more than one way to skin a cat. It's either, you know, doing more reps with the same weight, or it's doing more weight with the same amount of reps. And either way, that's going to require more intensity.
Okay. Yeah.
And the body, the muscles, the idea is that the muscles respond, they break down and they regroup, and they respond by growing because of the progressive overload that's being placed on them.
Okay. I just wanted to kind of just retouch on that again. Like I said, I know we talked a great deal about that on the previous show that we did together. And then something we hadn't talked about since all the way back at the first time you ever came on Advices, back when you were with Taylor, it was supplementation. And a lot of the stuff we're hearing nowadays, and I think things are kind of going back to basics. You know, you hear a lot about guys that are using 2+ grams of test. I don't think that you necessarily need that for your average gym goer or somebody who's just getting into gear, or even somebody who's just a recreational bodybuilder, or man, even for some of the pros, maybe some of the pros you work with don't need that, huh?
I'm telling you right now that the biggest thing is the overuse. These 3 grams a week, even the 2 grams, it's really not necessary.
Okay.
I mean, for several reasons. I mean, we talked about this, these guys using, you know, 2 or 3 grams a week with, you know, people or guys who are estrogenic to begin with, then you're talking about estradiol levels that are through the fucking roof, you know? And, you know, if you're using tons of anti-aromatase inhibitors off season, you know, trying to mellow out estradiol levels, then when it's contest time, you know, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
There's a point of diminished returns. I mean, seriously, it's like if you, a gram of test, I just, you know, I mean, maybe 1200 milligrams, there's nothing, there's no reason, I don't believe, to supersede that. I really don't. I mean, there's, and then we talk about these people that are abusing, you know, just tremendous amounts of trend, for example. You know, I mean, it's just forgetting of like blood pressure and all that. You know, just from a renal standpoint, you know, if you're having your blood pressure go through your roof, that's just going to tax your kidneys and everything. I mean, with tren, you know, some people, like, you know, these guys are using like a gram a week of tren. I just think it's just crazy.
And that's kind of like that newer school idea. I haven't been around for super long, but, you know, 10 years ago, what I was taught was, you know, rely on the test first and then add the other supplements in. I'm starting back up right now and I'm using a CC, a test, Sustanon every other day, and I'm not using Tren, but I do plan on adding it in. When I do, I'm just going to add in 50 every other day. And I honestly, I'll see a difference from that.
Yeah. The same thing is, I mean, keep in mind that like Trenbolone has shit. There's like 3 times more binding affinity, androgen binding affinity than compared to testosterone. So, I mean, the ratio, I mean, it's really like a 3 to 1 basically. I mean, it's funny. I think I've said this on every single podcast, but I mean, talking to Dorian Yates years ago, you know, I'm like, we're talking about what he was using, you know, and he literally, this is back then, there was like these from France, you know, these Parabolin, right. Real Parabolin, which is 76 milligram ampules. I mean, he was doing 3 of those a week.
Right.
I mean, that was it, like 3.
Yeah, there's no need for me to use more than Dorian, right?
there's guys, it's funny, you hear about these monster cycles of people doing, like, you know, someone finishing 5 out of 6 in, you know, novice division using a gram a week of Tren and, like, you know, 2 grams a week of test and, you know, gram of Deca and just, you know, crazy, just the amounts. I just don't get it. I mean, again, it's just, I mean, if you're, especially like if you're planning on doing a show, like it's hard to get in shape with all that. I mean, again, like, I mean, I know, like, I wish, I mean, I think the listeners sometimes are, you know, expecting like really fancy stuff. I mean, there's really one, I like using Tren as an example, the abuse of it.
Yeah.
With everything you were saying. I mean, so there's some individuals that are very estrogenic to begin with. Like, you know, the individuals that when they're just on TRT, they have an estradiol level of 60. You know what I mean? Like those individuals.
Okay.
And then, you know, they're taking a gram a week of Tren. So here's the deal. Progestin is a subdivision hormone of progesterone. So when progestin comes up, let's say you're, you know, the average individual who's not very estrogenic, you know, a little bit of Tren actually helps to indirectly lower estradiol levels.
Okay.
You know, from having progestin, like, slight elevation. But in the estrogenic individual, if progestin levels are really, really high, there seems to be an indirect effect on estradiol. I've seen on people's blood work. You know, like where high amounts of Tren and then, you know, their estradiol levels through the roof. Because it seems that progestin, this is speculation. I've talked about this with Dr. Scott before. It's just speculation, but it just seems that when progestin is really high, that it becomes antagonistic of estradiol. So it just seems like you see a lot of people who are just doing megadosing, and by the time they get on stage, they look like shit because, you know, they're having a hard time losing that visceral fat. It's just that overload of androgens. And again, the diminished point of returns. So it's just, it's taking away, as you're saying, you know, from the whole point.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever it is. And because I can't speak about it from that point of view, but I can just say I've seen it in real life. You know, I've seen people that end up looking, you know, not necessarily healthy and maybe didn't take their physique as far as they could have. And I don't know what the reasoning is, but I don't know. It sounds reasonable to me. So in the off season growing, what are some directions that you would suggest, you know, somebody, what are your thoughts as far as compounds go, I guess is what I'm asking.
I mean, basically the bread and butter is the long estrid stuff. To me, I'll go into specifics, but you know, for the most part, you know, there's three families of steroids. You know, there's the testosterone family, which encompasses, you know, testosterone and its different esters. Ecopose is in the testosterone family, and let's say Dianabol, which is actually methylated boldolone. You know, that's the basic testosterone family. And then with the nandrolone family, you know, we have, you know, tren, deca, and all the different subdivisions. You know, nandrolone, phenylpropionate of the deca, the regular deca. The tren, you know, there's trenace, there's trenhex, there's treninate. You know, these are that's the nandrolone family. And then the DHT family, you know, is the winstrol, the mastrone, the primavolin. So for me, for the most part, except for primavolin, the DHT family is, for the most part, very cosmetic. Hmm. So, I mean, it's not like, you know, winstrol, you know, mastrone, propionate. You know, these drugs are not going to help you build muscle. They're going to be more cosmetic. And I think a lot of what I'm hearing, sometimes I hear about people's off-season cycles, and you'll see, let's say, tests with mastrone propionate. And like, you know, I just don't, you know, I don't get it. I mean, really to build muscle, guys, the readers, is the base, as Scott was saying, the bread and butter, and the cycle should be built around the testosterone. Okay? Okay. Nothing builds muscle like the long ester testosterone. I mean, in the off season, I mean, it should be test and EQ. Okay. There could be cycling on and off of maybe 6 to 8 weeks of tren and enanthate. Noticing I'm mentioning the long ester there.
Okay.
You know, primobolan, believe it or not, is good for building muscle, because with primobolan, it's the only long ester. We'll get to mastrone and enanthate in a minute, but the primobolan is the long ester DHT derivative that actually can have its place in the off-season protocol. DHT is very, you know, it's very androgen binding, but you need a half-life there for it to really do much in terms of, you know, building muscle.
Okay. So, what about, out of curiosity then, what about like long-acting mastrone?
You know, I think that mastrone on paper, like the trenenanthate on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, excuse me, the mastrone and enanthate on paper seems like it would make sense, but it just doesn't quite cut it the way primobolan is in terms of being a long ester DHT derivative.
Okay. Fair enough.
So I'm not saying mastrone and enanthate is a junky drug, but it just doesn't, milligram for milligram, it's nothing the way, it doesn't behave the way primobolan does.
And this is your personal, you know, experience in your life, and as a coach, this is what this is what I want you here for, to hear this stuff. So
I think mastrone and enanthate is more of like a segue into using the mastrone propionate in prep.
Okay.
But I mean, to really take it for off season, it would be like, I'm just going to give an example to, you know, let's say a gram of test, 600 milligrams a week of EQ, maybe 400 milligrams a week of primo. This could be cycled on and off. So what I would do is, let's say we're looking at like an 18-week, you know, situation. I would have, you know, like the tests and the EQ can be going for the duration. And I would do, you know, 6 or 8 weeks on and off of, let's say, the trenenanthate. And the primobolan can be, primobolan is a long duration. So, you know, that can be in there for the duration. But for example, the tren, I would cycle that on and off.
And what's your reasoning for that?
For the tren being cycled on and off?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty harsh.
Okay.
I think with tren, you're going to see more of the blood pressure issues and everything. Mm. And again, I think when there's, you know, tren that's really, I mean, in estrogenic individuals, you know, I'm not saying you have to assume that one will be estrogenic, but
sure.
I mean, I think that tren is not shouldn't be chronically used the way, let's say, test and EQ. Test and EQ is, to me, that's just long duration.
That makes sense.
You know, the tren is very, I mean, it's a harsh steroid, but don't get me wrong. I mean, tren is very, it's a very powerful steroid. And it can be very beneficial off season in this environment, but stay away from the tranacetate.
Yeah.
During this time, I would really just opt more for the tranacetate.
Fair enough. What are your thoughts on orals in the off season?
The problem I find with orals in the off season is, I mean, first of all, Dianabol is extremely powerful. I mean, like my very first cycle was, there was D-ball, and I just remember gaining like 20 pounds like the first couple weeks. You know, it's very powerful. But what it seems like is, you know, how it's alkylated at 17 position. It's very, you know, it's methylated. It's a methylated steroid, you know. It seems, I'm sure you've heard about it too, it seems like the appetite, throwing off the appetite.
Yeah.
It seems like Dianabol in the off season, sometimes after a couple weeks, I've seen people with their appetite just fucking basements out.
Okay.
So, I mean, when I was talking about what could be used, I was referring to, you know, the injectables, those esters, the injectables. But, I mean, orals are great. I mean, there could be bouts of, you know, Anadrol and, you know, the Dianabol in the off season. I think, like, Anadrol, even though Anadrol is actually a DHT derivative, but, I mean, it's great for, you know, volume and strength, where Dianabol is actually more for actually building more tissue, though.
Hmm.
So Dianabol is a little bit more anabolic than the Anadrol in that way. But the problem is, I mean, I've seen people have appetite issues with Anadrol, don't get me wrong, but it seems like it's really the Dianabol. You know, it's kind of like, it sucks because it's really good at building muscle, and you see it like right away. I mean, Dianabol really increases a lot of nitrogen in the muscle, you know?
Yeah.
It gives that pop to the muscle, you know, and you know, it's really good for muscle growth. But again, what's the point if your appetite sucks and you can't get the food down? It's kind of counterproductive.
Yeah. Yeah. We're losing the foundation that we spent the first, you know, 30 minutes we talked about
again,
yeah.
Training and So, I mean, again, not very sexy sounding, like, you know, how come all these compounds are not being used off season? I mean, it's what's going to grow the muscle is, again, it's the caloric surplus, the heavy training and the long ester stuff. So if he can manage Dianabol before your appetite tanks out, then I'm all for it. But even if your appetite wouldn't suffer from it, I still think you'd want to just do like 6 week little, you know, bursts of it. And you'd want to, you know, just give yourself a, you know, a hepatic rest, you know, give your liver a little bit of a chance to mellow out. And, you know, I think it loses after 6 or 8 weeks, it's going to lose its effectiveness anyway.
Hmm.
So, I mean, Anavar can be used a little bit in the off season, but I mean, I think sometimes Anavar is good, let's say maybe at 10 or 20 milligrams, just to kind of free up the testosterone that's being used. A lot of times for some individuals, when they're using tests, a lot of it's bound up for some reason. Where there's you know, the freed up testosterone for some reason is just very low on blood work, you know? So sometimes Anavar can help to free it up.
That makes sense. I've never used Anavar in the off season before. I put 25 milligrams in of farm grade Anavar for, and I have enough to go for, I think about 8 weeks if I wanted to, but I'm just doing that as an experiment just to see how that works. I've heard some people say they like it a lot, and I know 25 milligrams is pretty low, but I figure if it's farm grade,
it's not very low. I mean, I hate using the expression back in the day, but back in the day there was these little cereal. We used to call them like the little footballs. These are like 2.5 milligrams. You know, back in the day there was no high dose Anavar available, and there was farm grade Anavar, and people were getting really great results from using, you know, 8 or 10 2.5 milligram Anavar pills.
Yeah, you know, so, and I see too, like a lot of the females back in the day would take like 2.5 to 5 milligrams of Anavar, and they seem to do, I mean, top pros, right? Like way back in the day.
Exactly.
Now I know that like 20 is super common, plus, you know, Winstrol, you know, plus something else, you know?
Exactly.
So you think that there's something different about a lot of the UGLs? They're just not as strong nowadays?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, there's definitely some good underground lab stuff. That's phenomenal. You know, I just think it's more like people just assume the amounts have to be that high.
Hmm.
Again, I mean, I think, I mean, what's the difference? I mean, if you, if you're using, you know, farm grain Anavar, if you're going to use too much Anavar after a while, I mean, watch what happens to your lipid profile. The DHT derivatives can really, like, you know, basement out your good cholesterol levels. So I think that, I mean, I think people just overall, like, I mean, dosing is way higher nowadays anyway. Part of which might be because the underground lab stuff is not as good as a lot of the farm grade stuff. But, you know, I think a lot of it just because people assume that they have to use a huge dosage.
Yeah.
To get the results.
I feel like we covered some good ground here. The only other thing I wanted to touch on, first I wanted to mention too, you know, and we take this for granted, you know, the suggestions that, you know, you're giving here, just the general generic outline that we're talking about, this isn't for, you know, the new guy. This is for, I assume you're talking to me basically, you know, or somebody even further along than me. This is somebody who's had experience and, you know, we've talked before, you know, a number of times about how if somebody's just getting started out, they really hardly need anything at all. Like just, you know, a little bit of test is going to take them a long way.
Exactly.
And I just wanted to point it out again, and I know you do too, just to not misconstrue it, that the stuff we're talking about, this isn't for somebody who's just getting started, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for someone who's just getting started, I mean, someone who's never done anything before, to use 500 milligrams a week of testosterone with 300 milligrams a week of DECA would be a huge response.
There you go.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I mean, to the listeners out there who are just getting started, because, I mean, don't, a lot of this, what Scott and I are talking about is very, again, it's very intimidating and overwhelming, I think. So, I mean, let's just try to simplify it a little bit. If you've never used anything before, don't jump on, here we go again with Tren, you know, don't jump on a gram of Tren, don't jump on, you know, 2 or 3 grams of where do you go from there? You're going to get you're going to get a really big response from just from small amounts. So, I mean, just start off small, really. If you're going from nothing to something, something is going to be very big.
And so the only last area I wanted to talk about, and once again, this is for people that are going to be, you know, a little bit more advanced. You know, we mentioned insulin at the beginning of the show, and, you know, what's your main purpose of insulin here? You know, what is the main goal of using this? You know, we're talking about carbohydrate timing. This all ties into the nutrition, I'm sure, right?
Of course. Well, insulin is for delivery, shuttle and delivery and recovery.
Okay. So without using exogenous insulin, we still are relying on our insulin during our workouts, you know, post-workout, building
muscle,
right?
That's exactly right. So when I was saying before about, you know, post-workout carbs and this, I'm referring to the non-insulin using person. I mean, your pancreas will release insulin when there's carbs, you know, I mean, and that spike that we're looking for post-workout is to take advantage of your pancreas releasing insulin. So there is the delivery and, you know, the delivery of these nutrients.
Okay. And so what's our purpose then of using exogenous insulin?
Well, because we're going to get, you know, the amount of insulin that we're going to use endogenously is going to be more than your pancreas could produce.
Okay. So it's, once again, just, it's a supplement then, supplementing a little bit more than we would have gotten otherwise.
Yeah. Or a good amount more.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But again, it's the amounts. See, the thing is, like, when there's insulins used, like, let's say if there's a good amount of post-workout carbs and you're using insulin, you're actually giving your pancreas a little bit of a break. You know, the beta cells in your pancreas don't have to punch out a bunch of insulin because we're taking it externally.
Yeah.
So this is a good way of actually retaining sensitivity, believe it or not, is by not having your pancreas work and work and work. But then if you go into the 20 units pre and then 21 units post and then another shot of insulin a couple hours later, then you're going to be opposite will happen. You'll lose sensitivity.
Okay. So if we're talking about, let's take our diet that and I love the way this all ties back together. Cause I, you know, sometimes we talk about these things and they feel so disjointed, because we're just talking about insulin, or we're just talking about training, or just talking about drugs. But I feel like we've got like a complete freaking picture here right now. Let's take that diet we started with. You've got, you know, 400 grams of protein. You've got carbs pre and post. Where does the insulin fit into this plan?
I mean, insulin is post. You know, let's say you're done training. You would use your insulin with, you know, your hydrolyzed whey. You know, one way of doing it is, let's say you're done training, you take your insulin with a scoop of whey, and then 15 minutes later, you would have another scoop of whey. This is just very generic 101 with, you know, your carb drink.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 45 minutes later, you'd want to have your meal, and you'd want to, you know, by rule of thumb, you know, you'd want to have at least 10 grams of carbs per intranasal unit of insulin. So if there's, you know, 7 IUs of insulin being used post-workout, you'd want to have, you know, at least 10 grams of carbs to accompany that.
Okay. So I know
that
a lot
should
of...
be, that should be in the meals. That should be in the meals, by the way. While there, you know, different insulins have different half-life, but if you're using, let's say, Humulin R, which basically, you know, has like a 4-hour peak, you know, 4-hour peak, and there's, you know, the duration is maybe 6 hours. You know, those meals would want to have at least, you know, the idea is you'd want to have at least 70 grams of carbs if you're using 7 IUs in those meals in that period of time.
Okay. So fast acting insulin or faster acting insulin. And I totally forgot what I was going to say. I had something totally lined up right there and now it slipped my, I remember what it was. So a lot of guys, you know, debate this one. Should you take your insulin pre-workout and, you know, load it into the workout versus post? And I see benefits of each case. So you're a guy, you prefer it post. Is there a reason that you don't like it pre? Because my thought is I've seen it work really well either way. And I've talked to a lot of really well-respected guys that use it post.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm more into the post. I mean, insulin can be used different ways. I mean, insulin can also be used in a smaller amount, let's say in the morning, at the same time you use growth hormone, and then your meal one has higher. So it's not always, there's a couple different ways of using it. I'm kind of skipping around, but don't get me wrong. I mean, the pre-workout insulin can have its advantages too, depending on the individual, depending on what's going on with the individual at that time.
Okay.
One problem I find with pre-workout insulin is when you're taking it and then during the workout, intra-wise, you're having to chase carbs in there, keep your belly full of carbs so you don't go in hypo. And, you know, you might have more of a, pump intro or whatever, but sometimes, I mean, you know, you hear about stories of people like fighting off going hypo intro workout.
Yeah. I've been there.
To me, that's very counterproductive because then look, then there's a cortisol release, you know, there's a cortisol response and like fucking, then you're what the fuck? I mean, you're training, and then if your belly, let's say, like, you know, okay, you're taking 10 units, you know, 10 or 15 units before you train. Intro, you know, you're gonna have to be loading carbs during the workout.
Yeah,
your belly's full of carbs; it can make you feel like sluggish and just shitty, you know. Especially people who are not glucose tolerant. There's a lot of like, you know, again, and if you're fat. Don't do insulin if you're fat.
Yeah, there you
That's
go.
That's very basic.
No, need
like,
for it.
No, I mean, seriously. So I think there's a lot of wrong/overuse of insulin. I'm more into the post-workout insulin. I mean, pre-workout insulin. I mean, I'm seeing people have really cool effects from pre-workout insulin.
Okay.
But that's when they're like, usually people who can tolerate, you know, carb shuttling during training where they don't feel bogged down, you know, their uptake is really good. They're sensitive. If you're going to do it pre, make sure your blood sugar is nice and stable going into it. So for example, I'm really big on the meal prior to the pre-workout insulin should be, have a good amount of fats there.
Oh, really? Now a lot of people, and this is something I've seen, people argue, especially on message boards back in the day that, you know, insulin's a shuttling hormone. So it's going to shuttle things to storage being, you know, the amino acids, but they could shuttle fats as well. My thought has been in my own life, I've experimented both ways. I'm going to tell you, Dave, maybe it's just me, but I have not gotten fat while eating fats and using insulin.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I mean, oh my God, think about it. So you have fat cells. Okay. You can't like deliver fat into fat cells. It doesn't work like that. doesn't work like that.
I haven't seen it in my own life, at least. You know, if anything, I found that I feel like if I'm not getting those fats in my meals, then I'm still not getting enough. Like without, and if, for my body type, I need to have the fats in there. If it's, even if it's really, really high carbs, I'm still not going to be able to grow as effectively.
I'm telling you right now, and I love that we just brought this up again, is that these essential fats, I mean, I've seen with my own experience, the athletes I work with, when fats are placed in the diet with certain timings, you grow more muscle.
Okay.
I mean, I hate using this expression. It's such a cliche. There's no such thing as an essential carb. It's true. You know what I mean? And like fats are just, when they use adjacently, I mean, especially with partitioning with fats, I mean, the idea is, okay, so going back to the pre-workout insulin, I mean, I'm really big on, if that's going to be done, I'm really big on fats being really high in the environment, you know, in the meal prior to then. Because then your blood, that's going to give you more insurance from having a blood sugar drop into workout, you know what I mean? Because the fats are there to stabilize. You know? I don't think fats should be used post-workout because the fact that you're going to shuttle the fucking fats into your fat cells, but just because we want that spike, you know? So I would rather, you know, and there should be, even if you're using a pre-workout, you still want to have post-workout spiking, right? Because insulin is still going to be in your system, right? Take advantage of it. So I wouldn't be placing the fats right there, but I would certainly, like the two meals afterwards, I would replace fats. You know, I mean, we want stuff to shuttle quicker so the fats can slow down maybe a little bit of the shuttling, and which is why we wouldn't want it, let's say, post, right away post, I'm saying, like in the drink. You know, you wouldn't want to have almond butter with your carbolin and whey isolate, let's say, right afterwards, you know, just because we want to take advantage of that spike and that quick load.
Yeah.
But it's not because, oh, well, we're going to shuttle the fucking, the fats into your fat cells. No, it's not why we wouldn't want it there. But guys, I mean, like, I know we're bouncing around. I'm bouncing around.
I don't think you are. You say you are. I don't see it.
I just want to go back. I just want to go back to, like, okay, so now, like, you know, whatever, like, I only have like four or five brain cells left. You know, they're activating again. So
yeah,
I just really want to emphasize the importance of fats when building muscle. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're talking about carbs and, like, you know, dense proteins and stuff. But guys, I mean, the thing is this, is that, like, I mean, just avocado, olive oil, almond butter, these fats are incredible for helping to build muscle. And for as far as pounding all the foods, I mean, a tablespoon of, you know how many calories? I mean, a gram of fat has 9 calories, you know? I mean, you can get a whole surplus of fats. I mean, a whole caloric surplus of fats in conjunction with your carbs and proteins that you're already doing, you can get an extra, you know, 2,000 calories just from fats every day. You know, okay. I mean, it's just, I can't emphasize how important fats are in building. I mean, I've just seen it. You know, I'll take any day a third less carbs, even half the amount of carbs in a, you know, in a bulking phase, if there's fats that are interwoven throughout the diet, I guarantee you there'll be more muscle growth. I guarantee you. There just will be.
I believe you. Where does growth hormone fit into all of this?
I mean, for the beginner or for the advanced, or
I guess, yeah, for the guy who's using the test EQ Primo cycle with the trend speckled in throughout, for a guy at that level, we'll say a guy at my level, where does growth fall into this program?
I think taking 3 to 4 IUs of farm grade and or really good quality generic, you know, first thing in the morning, is very complimentary.
You're a first thing in the morning guy, huh?
I'm a first thing in the morning guy when it comes to growth. I mean, you can do, like, you know, there's you can do growth upon awakening, and then it can be used, let's say, post-workout. But I'm really into the one dosage in the morning.
Okay.
First, and keep in mind, you know, your liver, we're talking about IGF. I mean, you're, you know, after the growth hormone becomes systemic, you know, your liver creates an IGF punch out of that.
Okay.
So,
and again, that's going to last a lot longer.
Yeah. I mean, I'm into the morning growth hormone because, you know, when you wake up, I mean, cortisol levels, we're more catabolic when we wake up, you know, we're coming from a fasted stage, you know, fasted state, presumably, if you haven't eaten for whatever, 6 to 8 hours. And, you know, that's growth hormones really, it seems like it's utilized on the empty stomach really well. I mean, these guys, you know, there's more advanced athletes, you know, using, you know, 10 or 12 IVs a day, you know what I mean? And like, certainly then you wouldn't want to do that all at once.
Okay.
You would, yeah. You would want to break it out, and you would, you know, that, in that case, I would recommend, you know, doing, you know, I would still want to do like a good amount of it in the morning first thing, but then like in between meals throughout the day, one could do a couple of IUs.
Okay. You
know? And I do want to talk about also at some point, one of these shows, the importance of, I believe, using T4 when we're using growth hormone.
Okay.
Okay. Because, you know, how, you know, excessive growth hormone, you know, we start lowering TSH levels and then it's not going to work anymore. So that's a whole other segment I want to talk about. But growth hormone can fit in very nicely here.
I saw post contest that my T4 was low. I'd been using some pretty good generics at the time, and I'd been on them for, you know, a year or so. And I was at like 4 units a day, and I couldn't recover from the contest, like the post contest fatigue. That's what it turned out to be.
Yeah, when we have translation from T4 to T3, then the deiotinase enzyme is actualized. You know what I mean? And there's like anabolic effects for that whole equation. So perhaps we can touch on that on another show. But yeah, I mean, of course, growth hormone has its place here.
I think we covered a lot here. I feel like this is a great foundation. And guys, here's my thought. You know, we can only talk in a very general way when we do a podcast like this. So some of this stuff may apply perfectly to one person, and it may apply in a roundabout way to everybody. This is just a basic formula to kind of work from. If you want to really make this work, you know, I encourage you to experiment on your own or to hire a guy like Dave, because it's through experience that somebody like Dave is going to be able to see what your body's doing and know what the next step is. So my thought is that if you have the money to hire somebody that, you know, and you want to make the progress, you'll be able to shave years, literally years off of, you know, your goals of getting, as I'm calling it, fucking huge. you'll be able to shave years off of it. And I love the idea of experimenting and trial and error. And, you know, like Dr. Scott Stevenson says, he calls himself a tinkerer, and I totally respect that. And I'm that type of person myself. And through that, I've learned so much, but I've also learned through so much just through listening to somebody and learning through following their direction.
Yeah, guys. I mean, I know like a lot of what Scott and I talked about today seems very vague, and it was vague, but I mean, you know, I wish if the idea is to get quote unquote fucking huge, you know, it's really basic stuff. I mean, it's moving heavy weight from point A to point B with good form. It's having enough calories. It's pounding the foods. And again, I know that doesn't sound very sexy to a lot of people, but I mean, it's really, I mean, without reinventing the wheel, I mean, this is what really does it.
Yeah.
And this is a very individualized basis. We talked about some people who are not as glucose tolerant. Some people fare better, even just growing. So people fare better in like lower carb environments with tons of fats and proteins. Some people thrive on really tons of high glycemic carbs where their body, they just works that way. So again, it's very individualized, you know, but the same basic principles do apply. You know, you're going to need a caloric surplus. You're going to need to focus on training. You know, I mean, when you're in the gym, I mean, shut up and squat, so to speak. You know what I mean? Like there's, you know, it's really, you know, you're going to, I mean, if it helps to have a training log, I mean, be progressive with your lifts. Focus on the compound movements. You know, don't have a chest workout that's just all hammer strength. You know, use your incline barbell, your flat dumbbell. You know, use these bread and butter exercises because that's what's going to do it. You know, squat. You know, people find any reason to say that they can't squat. Or it's unconfined. I mean, for the most part, I mean, you know, you have to get under that bar. You know, I mean. Yeah. And, you know, you need to do barbell rows and T-bar rows and dumbbell rows. You know, you have to do the exercises that are uncomfortable and that are you know, not glorifying, you know. It's easy to hop around a bunch of machines. So, I mean, stick to the basics, you know, and pound the foods. Worry less about the drugs. Again, I wish it sounded more exciting. But You know, and all the above takes work. Again, it comes down to elbow grease. You know, it's hard to prepare and make and eat all that food.
Yeah.
It's hard to do those exercises. It's a lot harder to do a T-bar row or a barbell row than it is to get on a piece of hammer strength. You know, I mean, it is. But the bread and butter is what's going to do it.
Yeah, I think that's a good message. And I feel like I'm proud to have you here and to share that message, because it's a message that we need to keep preaching, even though I feel like we've said it before. I've heard you say it before. I've said it before, and we've had other guests that say it. But I think that we need to keep hearing it. I need to be reminded, because like you said, it's not sexy, and it's easy for me to get sucked in. Even though I've been doing this a long time, it's easy for me to get sucked in and want this new fad that comes out to be an answer that I didn't know. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I want there to be an answer, that some sort of secret.
Yeah, guys. I mean, again, you know, we can really nerd out. I mean, I could put the glasses on with the tape in the middle, and we can talk about estrogen. We can go really specific and get really scientific. You know, we can do all that, and that's all that's fun. And I'm into all that, you know, but I mean, and we'll do shows like that, and we've done it before. But I mean, I just, as Scott's saying, we have to just really emphasize that if we're trying to get huge, I mean, it's really, it's going to take the hard work in doing this, in doing this, and the pounding the food. And it's not very fancy. It's just, but that's just the way it is. There is no fad of getting, there's no secret. There's no, you know, people are looking for the easy way out. I know that sounds very cliche-like, but it's, you got to get in that kitchen.
Yeah.
And you got to get under that bar, you know?
Yeah. So, you know what I wanted to mention too, Dave, I was great hanging out with you at the Arnold, and great getting to see your friends and clients. I got to meet, Stan McQuay and Dorian Haywood. I got to tell you, so when we met up, Dorian had been depleting for quite a while, right?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then what I saw, guys, was, we all sat down for lunch, and, Dave suggested maybe he had a burger and some fries. I was overhearing this. I was listening in and hearing the coach secrets. And he said, maybe even have a regular Coke, you know, regular soda. And I saw Dorian sitting there before the food. And then after he was done eating, he was like all red and veiny and sweaty. Yeah,
exactly. So we had, this is a couple of days of depletion. So there was the, you know, there was the aspect of the refeed and also the metabolic spike, because it's funny that you say that, because he was, 2 days later, he was 3 pounds lighter.
Wow, really? Really?
So I actually want to do a show where we talk about the timing of, actually, this is a good way to segue out. I do want to talk about just cheat meals, timing, the purpose of it, how a sugary cheat meal can behave differently in the body compared to just a greasier one. You know, we can, I'd love to talk about all that. Yeah.
Dude, that would be great. That'd be a really good one. In fact, I'm writing those notes down, because we, we got to have you back on sooner than later. It's, I always say like, oh, I love having you, Dave. And then let's keep doing this. And then 3 months go by before I actually nail something down again.
Now we'll do it again very, very in the near future. And speaking of Dorian, guys, look out for him. He'll be doing the Indie Pro on the 30th of March out there. And crazy lineups. It's going to be a good show. Okay. So look out for everybody there.
Dorian will be there. And you told me the goal is going to be just to come in as shredded as possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, Dorian is, he has like a lot of round, dense muscle. And the way his whistles and bells come out is when he's peeled. You know? So that's why we opt for extreme conditioning. You know, to me, conditioning is when the glutes are all the way across, you know?
You know, what's unique about him is that he's going to be able to maintain some really cool round shapes. You know, a lot of guys, myself included, I can get really shredded. It can look really freaky, but I also get deflated looking and small.
Yeah. I mean, the idea is that, like, you know, it goes back to what I was saying, like how I want people to be ready early, a couple weeks out, so that we have flexibility. Then you're in the driver's seat. Then to keep like roundness and density in the muscle, the idea is if we can be progressive with calories leading into the show, where like another show we can do, I just want to talk about how the last week doesn't have to be like this quote unquote peak week where you're okay, here it is. We have to load and deplete and do all that. Fuck all that. I mean,
right.
Where like, you know, stressful as is last week. I mean, we want people to be ready early. So we have the flexibility of Jesus Christ, God forbid we can progressively eat into the contest. Right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so that's a lot of that has to do with getting the homework done early so that there can be caloric density, there's the word again, going into the show. So the muscles can be more voluminous and harder and fuller and denser, not just, you know, shredded to the bone. So it's a package you're trying to create.
Fair enough. And Stan McQuay, he's a really cool dude. It was awesome to meet him. I'm looking forward to getting him on one of the programs here sooner than later. What's he have going on this year?
So we have what's going on this year is this is Stan's retirement year.
Okay.
So he's going to be doing a battery of shows. Probably most likely going to hit Tampa for us, which is in August. And then, you know, hopefully we can get a qualification there at Olympia September. And then at the end of September, there's going to be a show here in Long Beach where it's going to be 212 and Classic Physique. And that's actually where he did his very first Musclemania shows. It all started there for him.
No kidding.
So it's going to be kind of cool at the same auditorium. Yeah, it's going to be kind of cool. And then we're going to go to so Victor Martinez, we're talking over the weekend at the Arnold there. He's going to have a show in the Dominican Republic.
Okay, yeah.
And that's going to close off the year, and that'll be in October. I believe it's the second week in October we'll be out there. And that'll be Stan's that'll be his last show.
What a better place, what better place could there be to have a final show than, you know, in a beautiful island like, you know, Dominican Republic? That'd be a great way to go out.
Yeah, it'll be pretty cool. And I was talking to Victor, and this should be actually a really exciting show. So him and Jonathan Del Russo will be doing it.
Nice.
And we'll be out there, and it'll be really good media coverage. And, it'll be a good way to finish off the year. So right now Stan is segueing from off-season, you know, if we're looking at the first Saturday in August, you know, for Tampa, you know, then we basically in about 4 or 5 weeks start to gravitate towards our prep.
Okay, so we've got about 6 months right now. So he's going to start at about 5 months out, you're saying?
Yeah. Yep, and we have Adam Young right now. He's going to do his 212 debut at New York.
Oh, nice.
So he's I'm really happy how he's coming along. And so look out for him. He's in the midst of prep, you know, being that we're 9 weeks out.
What would you say Adam's main strengths are? What do you want to see out of him on stage that's going to be the wow factor for Adam?
Well, like what I liked about his look at North Americans, you know, he was obviously like the cored out glutes. You know, there's people say, oh, my glutes are in. You know, there's there's glute feathering.
Yeah.
And then there's striated glutes. And then there's like cored out glutes where the glutes look like they're fake.
Yeah.
You know, so we will have that look. From the back, I mean, he's got incredible, like his rhomboid, like, you know, his lats insert very low. He's got a really wicked rear double. Side chest is very cool. He's got a really, you know, he's got certain shots which are really, really impressive. His side tricep. Adam's very balanced. He's very balanced. It just works. So, you know, his thing is, you know, we saw the Arnold 212 last week. And a little disappointed in the conditioning.
Yeah.
Up there, you know.
I felt like there are a couple guys that I've really respected for their conditioning that maybe didn't quite bring it, you know, as much as I would have liked to have seen this time around. That's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little disappointing. I mean, again, there was only seven guys out there. But as I said before, it should be conditioning first. You know, if you got the conditioning, then okay, who's bigger, who's rounder, you know, all that. But I mean, the idea is that you can't go wrong with being shredded, you know, being in condition.
Yeah.
And but with Adam, it's not just that. We again, he's well ahead of schedule right now because of the fact that I want Adam to be able to eat into the contest where his calories are progressive the last couple of weeks.
Okay.
And that's what gives the volume and the pop to the muscle. So you're not just all scaled down and dissipating, flat looking, being ripped, you know?
Yeah.
So that's the idea. You know, I want him to be able to have as much caloric, you know, as we can, as much calories going in. So we have that look to create that 3D look on top of the cored out striations and everything that we're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I think that's great, man. You know, I wish luck to all your guys and to you. You got a great team, and they're just really cool human beings. So I really appreciated the opportunity to hang out with you guys, and always appreciate the opportunity to have you on the show here. Thank you so much for sharing not only your knowledge, Dave, but your experience, because that's the real difference maker here for me, is that, you know, I could go on a message board and I could read a lot of things about, you know, how many units of growth to take, for instance, but knowing how to apply these things, learning from you, trying to understand the way you see, that's what I think the real learning experience is for me.
Well, no, thank you for having me on. And again, like, I mean, I do like talking about all of, like, the little, as you mentioned, like, you know, the specific amounts of I use, all that stuff. And, right. You know, there's another time, another place for that. But what I really enjoy is when we talked about this basic stuff here, because yeah. As you said, this is the theme of this Get Fucking Huge segment that's going to be going on here is it really comes down to, excuse me, the bread and butter, no pun intended. We're talking about eating food, but
yeah,
I mean, it's really just, and people, you guys, the listeners, I know we're being redundant with it, but do not shy away from the basics. That's what's going to get you there. A lot of people, again, my corny metaphor is, you know, have the cart in front of the horse.
Yeah.
You know, all the details, everything that's all great and dandy, but get the basics in first, and then, you know.
And then you'll realize how much a lot of those little extraneous stuff didn't matter anyway.
That's exactly right. And don't get me wrong. I mean, like, you know, things have to be scrutinized, and we are get very specific. It's not like, you know, when we talk about numbers, like if I work with someone, it's not like, oh, yeah, just go eat whatever you can for meal five and just go eat a ton. Like, no, obviously, you know, things get very specific. I mean, there's carb cycling, there's fat, you know, we get very, very detailed, but again, the basics is the bread and butter of this. Oh, God, there we go again. Is the training and the pounding of the food.
All right, let's get out of here. Let's get out of here, Dave. I think we've nailed the point home. If anybody does want to reach out to you, though, how can they get a hold of you? Where can they find you?
All right, guys, thanks. They can message me at Dave Kalick on Instagram or on Facebook. You guys can send me messages there, and I'll get back to you.
All right. Awesome. Guys, for another episode of Advices Radio, I'm Scott McNally with the one and only Dave Kalick. We'll see you soon.
Scott, thanks for having me on.
Advices Radio Network.